Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, this is John Zadak, TV voice of the Cincinnati Reds, and you're up for Late Night Reds Talk.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tim Daniel, and welcome to Late Night Reds Talk, the live show and podcast that loves the Cincinnati Reds, part of the Belief Network, presented as always by Bet Online. The show is live streamed on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, and the podcast version is always up the next morning for you. I am joined tonight by Nick Kirby, Carlos Guevara, and our special guest, Dayton Dragons broadcaster Tom Nichols. If you are watching tonight on YouTube, please take 2 seconds to hit the subscribe button and like button as well. It really helps us continue to grow our show. Before we do get started, let's have Nick tell you about our partner, BetOnline, who has the Bengals as 7.5-point favorites against the Cowboys on Sunday.
BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-of-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your promo code to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50 to receive 50% off of your first deposit. That is BLEAV50 to receive 50% off of your first deposit. BetOnline is where the game starts.
So we are joined by Dayton Dragons broadcaster and director of media relations, Tom Nichols. Tom, first off, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. We're really excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about your time with the Dragons, how long you've been with them, what your job entails on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you. First of all, thanks for having me tonight. And I really compliment you on that open. That was exciting. The collection of play-by-play calls there took me back a little bit. In fact, two of my favorites actually took place about 5 minutes apart. The Johnny Bench home run called by Al Michaels and then the Bob Moose wild pitch, which is about four batters later that won that game and put the Reds in the World Series. But great job on that. Let's see. I started with the Dragons in 2008. At that point, I'd already been in minor league baseball for 20 years. I'd been with the Indianapolis Indians, the Mobile Bay Bears in Mobile, Alabama, the Fort Wayne at that time, Fort Wayne Wizards, and the Peoria Chiefs. And got to Dayton a few years after Carlos had passed through there, and I had heard about his screwball, so quite familiar with the success he had that year. In 2004, a team that also featured
Let's talk more about that.
Joey Votto and Chris Dickerson and Luis Bolivar, who was our manager in Dayton for 3 seasons. But anyway, I've been in Dayton since 08. I've seen some great players pass through. The first team featured the likes of Todd Frazier and Zach Cozart and Devin Mesoraco, and every season we've had some future Reds players come through. We have not always had a first-place team, but we've had some future major leaguers each season that the fans have been able to enjoy at Day or Ballpark. So that's made it a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we're going to ask you quite a bit about some of those players that came through this season. Obviously, through the trades and everything, some of those guys that were on the top of the prospect list made their stops in Dayton. But before we do get into that, Tom, I really wanted to ask because, being friends with Carlos now for as long as we've been doing the show, He speaks really highly of being in Dayton, just how cool it was. You know, everyone knows about the sellout streak, just like an awesome environment. I joke at times that I've been to Dayton, I've been to Louisville, and the stadiums are set up the same exact way. So if you know where one thing is at both stadiums, you know where everything's at. And I always think that's kind of cool. But what is it about being in Dayton? What is it about the city that loves the Dragons so much? The sellout streak has been going for quite some time. And like you said, you see future major leaguers come through all the time. So what is it about Dayton that really makes kind of a special environment, a special place for fans for the Dragons?
Well, I'd say multiple things. Number one, it's a great sports market. And you can see that from the fact that University of Dayton basketball has sold out many, many games consecutively as the years have gone by, just as we have with the Dragons. It's just a great family market, and that's really what we target, is family entertainment. So that's sort of played right into the hands of the market. On top of that, we have our Major League Parent Club, of course, within an hour of our ballpark. So fans stay connected with the players after they leave the Dragons and know that when those players are playing for the Dragons, they'll still have the opportunity in the future to continue to enjoy their career. So, for example, this year we had Ellie De La Cruz, who I'm sure we'll talk about. Everybody knows, I think, that watched him play this year, that we have not heard the last of Ellie De La Cruz. It's not like when I was in, for example, Mobile. If we lost a player, he was gone. He went to the West Coast, and you really didn't hear a whole lot about him again. This will not be the case with the players who come through Dayton. So all those things, plus the organization has really done a great job as the years have gone by with customer service and family entertainment and just trying to be a quality organization from top to bottom. They've had a great staff, and I think those things have combined. On that particular subject, I should get in here at the very beginning. We do have season tickets available now, so if you'd like to go to our website and check that out, it would be a good time to do it. But it's just been I think this year we actually have a great chance of finishing the season with the highest average attendance per home date in all of minor league baseball, not just our league, but the entire minor leagues, 120 teams. So those things have sort of combined to all add up to a perfect storm and make it successful.
That's awesome. I remember like going to games, every game felt like an event. Like it was a big deal. Every game, like, you know, you got, well, I think, what was it, like 10,000-12,000 maybe back then. Just every game felt like it meant something, and it helps you, you know, play at a better level, at a higher competition, because every, you know, the crowd's into it. You feed off of that, especially at home. It's a special place for sure.
I think, Carlos, one of the things that separates the Dragons is, you know, you can go to a lot of ballparks in America on a Saturday night in July and see a huge crowd. You can see maybe 7,000-8,000 fans. We'll still have that same number of people on a Tuesday night in April when it's 40 degrees outside. That's really what separates the Dayton franchise and the attendance numbers from most places. And part of that, again, ties back to the season ticket support. We've had such big crowds 7 days a week, not 6 days a week with the scheduling, Mondays off in the minor leagues. But that's been the story over many years, and it continues forward as we talk tonight.
All right, let's talk about some of those guys. And Tom, the first guy we had to discuss, you've already talked about a little bit. That's Ellie De La Cruz, the Reds' number one ranked prospect, 15th overall, according to MLB Pipeline. People we've talked to throughout the season have said that they would not be shocked if next year, when this list comes out, that he is the top prospect in baseball. We saw you got him for 73 games in Dayton before he got called up to Chattanooga, where he continued his success. But, 161 weighted runs created plus, just super dynamic on the base path, as you saw, 46 stolen bases this year. For you, getting to see him on a day-to-day basis, what can you tell us that you saw from Ellie De La Cruz that jumped out the most?
True five-tool player. I mean, you hear that term thrown around a lot, five-tool, four-tool, whatever the case may be. And sometimes it really is legitimate, sometimes it isn't. He is a true five-tool player in that he hit 300 at two different levels this year. He's hitting 300 right now in the Southern League as a 20-year-old, the youngest player in the league. He hit 28 home runs this year. He is as fast as anybody in the league. He's got an outstanding arm at the shortstop position. And his defense this year probably would be of the five the one that needs the most improvement to stay at shortstop. I think he can do it. He's got a ways to go there, though. That would be the one of the five tools that, while it's strong, it doesn't stand out as much over the better defensive shortstops at our level. I'll tell you this. I saw De La Cruz play all season. He is a truly elite special talent, such that when you watch him and compare him with some of the other players that are supposed to be in that same range, and you've got right there number 15 overall in all of minor league baseball, MLB pipeline. I think Baseball America's got him somewhere in that same range. And the first thing you would ask if you saw De La Cruz play this year is, how can there be 14 guys ahead of him? How could that possibly be the case? And it really comes down to one thing, too many strikeouts. That is the fear that scouts have, because he did strike out about a third of his at-bats this year. I think when he left our league, he was third in the league in strikeouts. Other than that, he was near the top in everything from a positive perspective, and such that I think when we saw other players who were as highly regarded, Carlos, you were a Padres fan, I'm not sure, or Padres player, not sure how closely you follow the Padres at this point, but they had a prospect in our league this year that was a big-time blue-chip prospect, an outfielder by the name of Robert Hassel, who was a first-round pick as a high school pick out of the state of Tennessee. When when there was talk at the deadline that the Padres might go after a player, a lot of people said there's no way they'll give up Hassel. They eventually did give up Hassel, but a lot of people were surprised by that. When we saw Hassel and De La Cruz in the same stadium, in the same game, on the same day, nothing against Hassel, but there was no comparison in terms of talent between those two players. And Hassel's, I think, just about everyone has him top 20, top 25, maybe a little higher on the prospect list for all of minor league baseball. De La Cruz is in a class of his own this year. A couple of things I'll mention on him just statistically. Number one, we had a night this season where De La Cruz hit a home run left-handed, a home run right-handed in the same game. It had not happened in Dayton in 10 years. You saw it happen. You say, well, will it be 10 more years before somebody does that again? Actually, it was two more days, because he did it again 2 days later. Home run left-handed, home run right-handed, the same game. he became the third player in Dragons history to hit 20 home runs and hit 300 in the same season. But again, you look at the tools, and that's what's really going to stand out. He plays with a tremendous amount of energy. He's got blazing speed. He changes every game he plays in with his energy and his hustle and his speed. And the other tools are right there too. So I'm a big fan of De La Cruz. And you said big leagues next year. And I would say that would seem to be the pace he's on right now, because he jumped to Double A as a 20-year-old, again, youngest position player in the league, and he did not miss a beat. So by maybe June of next year, Carlos, you'll remember around the time Jay Bruce came through the minor leagues, and it was a skyrocket for him. And I think they moved him up around the 1st of June. There was talk about that time, about service time, the Chris Bryant rule, as some call it. And so that may play into a factor next year to some degree. But De La Cruz looks like a guy that nobody's going to stop him right now. He's going to have a long major league career. Now, could he do a Corey Patterson and get to the big leagues and just become an average player? You don't know until he gets there. But he's going to be there, and he's going to play for a long time.
Corey Patterson, that's triggering. I wanted to ask you about the other big prospect. I guess the only one that could maybe, you know, fight for De La Cruz towards the top spot, and Noelvi Marte, who the Reds got in the Luis Castillo trade. Couple things on him. I noticed he missed the last three games of the year. Was there anything to that?
He had a personal issue that he had to head home for. I think if you look on Twitter, I don't really want to talk about it too much, because we really weren't cleared. And I think if you look on Twitter today, you'll see a mention of him in the WBC. And I think there was a connection there.
But nothing physical.
Injury, no problems, nothing along those lines.
Okay, good.
Marte did join our club immediately after the Castillo deal. He took over basically for De La Cruz, a little time in the middle where Jose Torres, our second baseman, who's a natural shortstop, moved back to short. And then when Marte arrived, Torres moved back to second base. Marte question would be, can he stick at shortstop? He's going to have some work to do. He may outgrow the position. Some would say third base might be a future position for him. You've got a lot of shortstops right now in this organization, and most of them are going to have to move because, as far as I know, you can only have one shortstop on the field at a time. So you've got, for example, our number one pick last year who came through Dayton, Matt McClain out of UCLA, shortstop at Chattanooga this year. You've got Jose Barrero playing shortstop in Cincinnati right now. You've got De La Cruz, who's a shortstop and could play some third base. Marte is a shortstop. He did not play any other position except shortstop with us, unlike De La Cruz, who saw quite a bit of time at third base. Then you've got the other player they got in the Seattle deal, if you guys are familiar with, Arroyo. Some like him as well, or even maybe a little better than Marte. He's a shortstop. They've got a lot of players to play the same positions. And a lot of those guys, somebody's going to have to move the third base to the outfield. Marte, I would think, could be a candidate maybe to move to third base. They have not certainly made that decision yet. He stayed at shortstop all the way with us. I would say don't compare him to De La Cruz. Nobody compares. He is his own guy. He's a similar age player to De La Cruz. 20 years old in our league, is very young, is now a high A club. We were low A for 20 years. We're high A now. So a 20-year-old in high A is a young player. Hit better as the season went along. We never saw that light tower power that people talked about. There were people that talked about Marte and said, as good a pure power as any one of the minor leagues. We didn't see that at all. We saw a few home runs, but they're more like the wall scraper type. We had some guys like that this year that get the ball out halfway to the moon. Austin Hendrick, Reese Hines, those types of guys. Marte was not that kind of a home run hitter. He finished up strongly and finished up at 292 in just 30 games. He was the only player we had all season, including De La Cruz, who had more hits than strikeouts, which is the way the game has gone now. It used to be, and I was on with Lance McAllister this evening, and I mentioned that when I started with the Dragons in 2008, all 30 major league teams had more hits than strikeouts as a team. Right now in the major leagues, 18 of the 30 have more strikeouts than hits as offensive stats. And on our team this year, with as many good prospects as we had, Marte was the only guy who had more hits than strikeouts. That's just the way the game has gone. And I hope it changes back at some point, because that's just way too many strikeouts. But Marte, don't compare him to De La Cruz, but a good prospect to keep an eye on. And next year, will he jump to Chattanooga or will he start in Dayton? I could see it both ways. He's still young, but he did show tools, and I thought he got better and more comfortable over the 30 games. Certainly the stats said that. The 30-game period in Dayton, he looked better, I think, week to week as he got more comfortable with his new organization.
I know you said you didn't want to talk about the WBC. He was also reported that he was going to do the Arizona Fall League. Do you know anything about that?
I think there's a plan for him to go to Arizona. I didn't know if it was Fall League or Instructional League, but I do believe he's going to spend some time working on some things out there. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't try to start working him in at a different spot on the field on at least a limited basis, because the Reds have really been big on that in recent years, is trying to create more versatility with their guys and make them into multi-positional players. When we had Indy up, for example, in 2018, they tried to play him some at shortstop. Senzel actually never played the outfield in the minor leagues. I've never totally agreed. Maybe I'd get you guys' thoughts on this with the way they've gone about it. We had, for example, Todd Frazier in 08, and he would play shortstop one day, the next day would play third base, and the next day would play left field, the next day would play first base. And I thought, I don't know how a guy ever really develops a level of expertise when every single day he's at a new position. Let him play one position for a week and then move him to the other position. Let him play, stay there for a week and develop a comfort level at that position. That nobody really does that, though, not just the Reds, anyone. That you'll see guys jump all over the field every day from one day to the next. So maybe I'm just on my own on that one. But Marte never played anywhere but shortstop. I would expect at some point they will get him some experience at third base and let him play some there. An instructional league or Arizona Fall League probably be a great place for that to happen.
Yeah, you got to think, though, some of these infielders are going to have to move to the outfield pretty soon because there's really not a whole lot there in the minor leagues outfield-wise.
That's true.
You mentioned earlier, Tom, about maybe getting the game back to kind of what it was. And so recently MLB has made some changes to the game, which I think is going to help, you know, bring athleticism back since taking the shift out and things like that. As far as the pitch clock, something that y'all experienced in the minor leagues this year, can you talk a little bit about that and any changes you might have seen as a fan or notice as maybe even an insider on it?
Absolutely. We had the pitch clock all season. The first week of the season, it wasn't really enforced as much, and after that, it was enforced very strictly. I would say about a quarter of the pitch clock violations that we had were actually called on the hitter, not the pitcher. And not that a lot were called. I would say maybe every third game we would see a pitch clock violation. And again, about maybe a quarter of those on the hitter. It had an enormous impact on the game. I think if you're a fan watching, number one, you don't notice the clock. You notice at the end of the night, you look at your watch, and for a 7:05 first pitch, it's 9:30 instead of 10:15. That's what you notice. And the game itself, it's played as if, think about a guy that you remember who was a quick worker as a pitcher. And I think back to Tom Browning or before that, Jim Cott, guys who just did not waste any time out on the mound. They got the ball, they got their sign, they went to work. It forces everybody to sort of move in that direction. If you're a guy that's real meticulous out there, takes a lot of time between pitches, he'll have to adjust because he will not be able to continue doing that. That style of pitching will be gone. You'd get a pitch clock violation every hitter. So I think from an overall perspective, the studies have shown same number of pitches per game this year as last year, but the games are taking 30 minutes less time. So that's 30 minutes of just dead time. And it's not just the pitch clock. It's you can only throw to first base twice now. That's had a huge impact, more stolen bases. After the pitcher throws the second time to first base, if he throws one more time and doesn't pick the guy off, it's a balk. So the base fielder is not stupid. He knows after that second pitch, that second throw to first base, there's not going to be another one. So he can lean, maybe get a little extra momentum, maybe be moving a little bit that direction, and it makes a difference, and he can steal the base.
That's wild. I never heard of that one.
That's also going to the big leagues.
Really?
Two pickoff throws to any base, not just first base, but per batter. So it does change the game. The base stealers, there's some strategy there. If you're the pitcher, do I really waste a throw to first base if I don't think I could pick him off? Because then it's going to put him one step closer to knowing there's not going to be another throw to first base. So those things all change the game. I think it's all this big picture combined. You've got less time between hitters. You've got hitters who can't step out and readjust their batting glove after every pitch. It's not just the pitch clock on the pitcher. It's the whole overall product, and they've managed to take about 30 minutes of dead time out of each game and shorten the game. So it's a better product. Some will disagree, but I think the overall point I would make is you probably won't notice a big difference just as you didn't when you had a quick worker, except you might say the pace is a little quicker, but that's about it. And then at the end of the night, you'll say, wow, 30 minutes less time than what I'm used to, and it'll be that way most nights.
Tom, there were a couple more guys I wanted to ask you about. We'll do it a little quickly here. One of the guys I really wanted to touch on is Jay Allen, who was one of my favorite prospects coming up. Had a really, really good, after getting called up to Dayton from Daytona, really came on strong. Left us on red. Jay, we're still want to have you on the show if you're ever interested. Please, we'd love to have you. But obviously kind of, you know, these new rules talk about a guy who could be a menace in the base path. A guy who stole 43 stolen bases, had a good 11 games in Dayton. What kind of jumped out to you about Jay?
Base stealing ability and defense in center field really helped our club. In fact, you may or may not be aware, we finished, I think we went 16-5 over our last 21. That kind of coincided with his arrival in Dayton. It wasn't so much just pure stats that you would look at and say, hey, he hit OPS 900 or whatever the case may be. It was the energy he brought to the team. He comes in and starts stealing bases, and all of a sudden you see everybody else start stealing bases. And this is the part of the game that the analytics will never, never pick up, is the human element, the fact that these guys aren't robots out there. You brought a guy in with great speed and base stealing ability, and like I say, all of a sudden everybody else is stealing bases. It wouldn't have happened without him there. And after this happened, I sit back one day and I thought, you know what? You need a guy like that on every team that has speed that the opposition just has no answer for. A guy that can bring that element, game-changing element to the game, where every single night, because speed doesn't go in a slump. That's one of the oldest sayings in baseball. Every night, that guy can change the game with his speed. He's an outstanding defensive center fielder. Will he hit? We'll see. He was very young in our league, 19 years old. Didn't hit much in Daytona. Missed a lot of time with injuries. But he's got a couple of tools that are elite. I love Michael Ciani defensively, and Ciani is almost unmatched in the Red system over the last several years as a defensive center fielder. I don't think there's been anybody. I mean, you could maybe Jose Siri was a player that could be compared to Ciani in some ways. They're different. Ciani maybe has some things he did better, and Siri was probably a little faster than Ciani. Siri had Billy Hamilton type speed. Allen is different, but he's in that same level as Ciani. So he's going to change games. Pitchers are going to love him. He's going to make catches and save you runs that no one else would have. And I'm a big defensive guy. I'll say that. I don't want someone who, as they say, can he play center field? What's that mean exactly? Can he play center field? I could go out there and play center field. I need to make plays to win games for me. And that's what Allen can do. He won't just make the routine play. He'll make big plays in key situations to get a pitcher out of a tough jam and be the only guy in the league that'll make that play. So the question again is, will he hit? And we'll find out, I guess. He's still young, probably back in Dayton next year, so we'll find out.
Tom, I wanted to ask you about Austin Hendrick. I saw him earlier in the year and really looked pretty lost at the plate, but he really finished the year strong. What did you think about his adjustment late in the year with his strong finish of the last month plus of the season?
Very interesting prospect. First of all, he's got absolute thunder in his bat. He can hit the ball a mile. You see what the Reds saw, and it didn't take long to see it. A couple of foul balls maybe, and you saw the ball came off his bat differently than it did anyone else's. He's got tremendous raw power and bat speed. Strikeouts are a huge issue with him. He was a much better athlete than I expected based on the scouting reports. We played him some in center field, and he played pretty well out there. He stole some bases for us, not just a big hulking, certainly not a he's not an Adam Dunn type player. He does have that kind of power, though, but he's an athletic player, but a lot of strikeouts. The ability to cut down the strikeouts are going to dictate his future. Some scouts are skeptical because there's so many, but I'm not ready to say that. He improved quite a bit with us this year. And still another young guy who's really he's out of a cold weather state, and he missed the entire 2020 season with COVID. So he's really only played two full seasons. And so there's still a lot of potential there. That's a guy to keep an eye on. I like him as a person too, and I'm pulling for him, but just tremendous power. A guy that can hit the ball out of any part of the ballpark at any time you need him to in the game, but just has to cut down on the strikeouts.
Let's start talking about the important stuff, the pitching, Tom. It's all that anybody really cares on the show about anyway. So talk to us about some of these strong arms that we have here with Abbott, Phillips, Petty, Boyle. What do I keep hearing? Nothing but good things about all of them. So help me understand what I'm looking for or what I'm going to be expecting.
Boy, those are four interesting guys that you've got on the screen right there, and they're all very different. They all have something about each of the four that is that would put them at the top of the list in that area. I'll just take them, and I know you guys don't want to go all night here, so I'll take them one at a time and try to get through this fairly quickly. Andrew Abbott of the four was the best with us this year, he was absolutely dominant in the time with the Dayton Dragons, a man among boys in the Midwest League. His ERA when he got moved up was under one, way over a strikeout an inning, just a guy that no one could hit. A lot of high fastballs and breaking balls that were too good for the opposing hitters. Doesn't throw real hard, maybe 93, so about an average fastball. Some would say you're looking at a number four, number five starter there, or a bullpen guy perhaps, because he doesn't have elite stuff. But he was so good with us, it was hard for me to imagine that you could put that kind of a cap on his long-term ability. He did struggle some in Chattanooga, but his last few starts were excellent. I'm watching him, and that's a guy that I really think is worth a long look. Okay, the next guy on your list there, Phillips, really interesting prospect. Got him in the Winker deal, the Winker Suarez to Seattle trade. 20 years old in our league this year, had nights where he was just electric and just made opposing hitters look silly. He would have nights where he would sit at 98 miles an hour. I'm not kidding you. I mean, sit at 98 pitch after pitch, with a strikeout pitch being the breaking ball. I mean, that's a pretty good combination. And a young guy, command was not great, below average. But with that kind of an arm and that at that age, that's a guy that is going to be interesting down the road. Okay, the next guy you've got there, Chase Petty. In my mind, maybe the best prospect of the four, because he's the youngest but most most refined. Maybe Abbott would be more refined, but Petty is a guy with good command, stays ahead in the count, has hit 100, has a very good breaking ball, but the command is better than that of Phillips. He doesn't consistently throw as hard as Phillips. He does have top end velocity that's reached 100, but consistently he's going to be 95, maybe 96 in that range. Youngest pitcher in our league all year, 19 years old, out of New Jersey, had nights where he would throw, how about this, Carlos? He would throw five innings, and in this day and age, you don't see this. He would throw 55 pitches in five scoreless innings and do that as a 19-year-old. So we're not talking some scatterarm young guy. We're talking a guy that's got command to get hitters out in just a few pitches. And then the last guy on your list there is Joe Boyle, who's got the biggest power arm maybe in minor league baseball. The ERA that you see there is all based on the fact that he's been hit a little bit in Chattanooga, Double A. When he was with us, his ERA was under one almost the entire time with almost no hits. I mean, he was averaging 1 to 2 hits allowed per start, just dominating. 13.7 strikeouts per nine. That's pretty good. Command was the worst of the four, but arm strength and power with both his, he had a fastball in the high 90s, slider about 89, excellent curveball, 80 miles an hour when he threw it for strikes, totally unhittable after he'd thrown the fastball in the high 90s. That was oftentimes his strikeout pitch. Those are four really interesting guys you've got there that are all very, very much worth looking at in the future.
Tom, I wanted to ask you real quick about one thing that, you know, we talked, you gave us a ton of insight about the prospects here, and we're definitely grateful for that. But there was a moment you discussed that you had a 2018, you got to get called up and do a big league game. And I think Nick actually might have a clip of that.
really excited about the chance to sit in with Jeff and Marty tonight. I've been doing this for a while and always a Reds fan, grew up as a Reds fan, have stayed close to the Reds as a fan for my entire life, and this would be a great thing for me tonight. Very excited. Ground ball hard up the middle, base hit. Peraz is 3-for-4. He lines one to right. It is in for a hit. Around third, Peraza. Here's the throw home. He is in. So Philip Irvin, big two-out RBI hit against the new pitcher. Swing and a miss by Arcia. That's strike three. Swing, line drive. Base hit center field. That'll move Jeanette to second base. Swing and a miss, and he struck him out. He gets Moustakas swinging for a big second out of the inning. Pratt stands in, ground ball through the middle, base hit center field. Shaw's being waved in. Hamilton's throw home is in time. They get him. Thanks to the Reds, Marty and Jeff and everyone else. Thrilled for me. Glad to be with you tonight from Great American Ballpark.
That's good stuff right there, Tom.
Thank you. I haven't seen that stuff for, I guess, 3-4 years. Brings back some good memories. Good night for my family who was with me. My mom, who's since passed, was listening that night, and that was a good night.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. So I was going to say, I know, like, talk a little bit about that. You know, obviously, we know the legend that Marty Brenneman is in many people's eyes, and you said in there you grew up a Reds fan, so I'm sure that was a pretty surreal moment for you.
It was a career moment for somebody that's been in minor league baseball for now 35 years. I'm very thankful that they gave me that opportunity. Marty and Jeff were absolutely as nice and friendly and helpful as anybody could be. In addition, the Reds front office and worked with our front office to make that possible. And so I'm really thankful that I had that chance. You could go through this life forever and ride the buses for as many years as I have and never get the chance to sit in the big league stadium and call a game. And so for me, one night, I think it sort of was a Moonlight Graham night where you get your name in the book, even if it was only for one night. So it was a special night for me. And I'm sure Carlos can think back to his major league debut and how he felt on the mound that night. And no one can ever take that away from you. That's it, right there. Yeah, something special.
That's what it is. Nobody can ever take it away, no matter what.
Derek Lee didn't stand a chance when Carlos took the mound that night.
Damn right.
I want to ask you real quick about, so Tommy Thrall obviously stepped into that seat, was with Pensacola for a long time before getting the job with the Reds. Kind of your thoughts on Tommy's work that he does, you know, like you said, as a Reds fan, obviously a very likable dude, very enjoyable, really good at his job, but kind of curious your thoughts on what you like of when you hear the broadcast with Tommy Thrall.
Well, I've known Tommy for a long time, actually, long before he ever joined the Reds organization. He and I worked together in the same league in the, I think, 2005, 6, and 7. And so we got to know each other pretty well. And I was thrilled for him when he got that opportunity. He's got an absolute big league voice and big league delivery. And he knows the game. I was happy in his case and John Sadek also. That, you know, a guy that worked his way up through the minor leagues earned the opportunity. That's a way to look at it. And so that's what I appreciated was they gave the opportunity to someone who had earned it there. And that's all you can ask for is get a chance. It's been a tough year for those guys, believe me, because when you're struggling and everybody on the one hand says, why is he being a company man? And on the other hand, you can't be negative. You're paid by the ball club to try to maintain a positive level of fan reaction. And so you've just got to do the best you can with it. You don't want to sound like a total homer, but at the same time, you've got to keep everybody as positive and optimistic as you can. And that's a fine line sometimes. It's not easy to do when you've lost a lot of games in a row and fans are frustrated and maybe the players aren't in the best mood around the broadcasters sometimes in those kind of days. But I know they've got a great group of players to work with down there right now. So, cause a lot of them came through Dayton there's a lot of really good guys there. So that's one thing we've been blessed with in the Red system, really, for the whole time I've been there, is quality people to work with. Whether, you know, Tyler Stevenson and Jonathan India, Tyler Malley, Jesse Winker, those guys were all just really enjoyable people to work with. And I'm leaving some out, obviously. And as Carlos would probably tell you, if he were to think back among his favorite teammates, it's not always the player who was the best player, but maybe there's some qualities as a person that stood out. And we have the same with our players. Tyler Steele, our longtime trainer in Dayton, and I sometimes we'll just get to talking about our all-time favorite Dragons players as people. And both we'll sometimes name the same people. That's what makes it all fun and enjoyable, I guess.
You say that, but Carlos's best friend is literally Joey Votto.
But if you would listen to mine and Joey's conversation about our best teammates in the minor leagues, you'd be like, who's that? Like Anderson Machado, he was probably our favorite one. Not too many people know who Anderson Machado is.
That's true. And I've got some of those same kind of guys on the list. A Reds minor leaguer who made his major league debut this year was an outfielder by the name of Narciso Crook. You've probably heard the name in spring training, maybe, because he was in spring camp with the Reds several times, never on the 40-man roster. And absolutely, by his teammates, the most beloved teammate in the entire organization. And I guarantee you, in fact, I told one of our coaches that he had been called up by the Cubs this year, and he just yelled out with joy and started calling the other coaches to tell them that Crook had been called up to the big leagues, not with the Reds, because he's gone from the Reds. That was the kind of mark he made on the people that he played with, played for. And that's the way it is in the minor league sometimes.
So we've kind of touched on a lot of stuff here, Tom. Thanks so much, man, for taking some time to hang with us here and kind of give us some insight on the Dragons and things like that. Before we do get out of here, if you have some Dragons fans, some Reds fans who do want to interact with you and you want to share your socials, by all means, take a second here. The floor is yours, man.
Okay, yeah, I am on Twitter. TomNichols02 is my handle. Also, you know, you can reach out to us through the Dragons Twitter account as well. Check out our webpage. It's a lot of great information there. I've really worked hard to create some things for the serious fan, the more hardcore fan, that allows them to keep up with how the team's doing. And even if you're not going to follow us on a daily basis during the season, of course, we're at the end of a year, so you can always go to what we call our digital press box, which has got great information updated daily, and that'll allow you to maybe have a little more of an insider's look at Dayton Dragons baseball. But you can also, like I said, you can reach out to me on Twitter, TomNichols02, and I think it's connected with some of the promos you guys put out today on Twitter. You'll see that there, and I'd be happy to take any questions there.
Perfect. Well, please make sure to shoot us a DM so we can send you a Late Night Reds t-shirt. Just need size and address, and we'll get that out to you, man.
All righty. Thank you very much for having me tonight. I knew that 20 to 30 minutes was going to be a tough thing to do. When we start talking baseball, 20 to 30 minutes is not going to cut it.
Yeah. Could get next you for 2 hours. Next summer, boys, if we make that summer trip again, we need to see if we can schedule around a day game in Dayton and then night game in Cincinnati.
We'd love to have you.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. Good deal. Awesome. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.
That was a lot of fun. Just really, really awesome insight on really good on the prospects. And, you know, Dayton obviously being such a cool thing. You know, Carlos told us a lot about his time there and how fun it was. So that was neat to have. I mean, I definitely appreciate you putting that together, Nick.
Yeah. Very cool. Tom gave us way more time than we asked for. So
yeah,
really appreciate it. He had a lot of really good insight into.
He's coming back in the off season for sure.
Yeah, well, I'll bug him again. I want to get him right after the Dragon season ended while it was, you know, fresh, and I thought it'd be a good time to get him in there. And you know, there's just so much Reds to talk about right now. It was hard, but you know, we made sacrifices.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little behind the curtain. When he logged on, And Carlos gets on. He goes, "Hey, Tom, I'm Carlos." And he goes, "I know who you are. You're in the Dayton Dragons media guide every year." And I was like, so that was pretty awesome. All right, let's talk a little bit about, I guess, for a few minutes about the games today. And I know a lot of people seem to be really mad that a 4A team in the Reds currently lost to, got swept by a 4A team in the Pirates, which at this point, if you're really still upset about wins and losses, I want to win as much as anyone. But at this point in the year with 20 games to go, you know, it is what it is. Nick Lodolo today, 11 strikeouts. That was pretty cool. But yes, I know everyone's going to look at the 4-game sweep from the Pittsburgh Pirates over the Reds. And yes, thank you, Nick. If you look at Tankathon right now, the Reds are in the top six still and fairly close to breaking where they need to go to have lottery chances. So, you know,
suck it, Pirates. You're just hurting yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. O'Neill Cruz helping my fantasy team hitting home runs today. Jerk.
Hey, Nick Lodolo, though. Hey, I mean,
awesome.
I'd rather Lodolo pitch well and him get rocked and win a 10-9 game or something at this point, you know. Man, he's been just the way he's finishing the year is just so impressive. You know, usually it's the opposite. You know, usually these guys slow down in their rookie year towards the end of the year. And he seems to be getting just better and better with every start. And I don't know, Carlos, what's your thoughts on Lodolo? I can't be more pleased with what he's done this year. I mean, he looks like a bona fide ace to me.
Yeah, for sure. He's the most mature. Like, I think we kind of said at the beginning of the year in our predictions that who we thought might have the best year. I think most of us lean towards Lodolo just because, you know, his experience of throwing more pitches, period. I said earlier today, like his slider to a right-hander down and in, it's just straight out sexy. That's all there is to it. Ever since we lost that Castillo changeup, I mean, that's just, oof, it's nasty. And Barry was talking about how it's one of those Randy Johnson types where right-handed hitters, sometimes they'll be swinging and jump up at the same time because they think it's going to hit them in the feet. But he's definitely been fun to watch. I mean, he's got number one, number two potential for sure. I'm not sure about number one quite yet. On a good playoff team, but he's getting there. I mean, he's just getting better every time out there, and it's all you can ask for, really.
Yeah, my our good friend, my former arch nemesis Chad Dotson, wrote a really good article in Cincinnati Magazine about Nick Lodolo and how they found another ace in their deck with kind of this this progression of movement. And talked a lot about just how he's found his control the last few months and how much that's been really helpful in his growth and progress. And like Carlos said, that slider, man, that's awesome. It's so fun to watch. I know Pitch Ninja is kind of, I think he's highlighted a couple times or somebody has on Twitter, and that's been really kind of neat to see. So yeah, man, I think like I totally agree. I know everyone wants to look at the wins and losses at this moment, but I'm going to take pride in seeing Nick Lodolo having 11 strikeouts and not walking anybody and just seeing very beautiful control in the game.
As good as that slider is, as nasty as it is, that fastball that he locates up and in, up and away, low and away is unbelievable at this age right now. And that's what makes this slider even crazier. Talking to great hitters, which I had the opportunity to, like coming up and, you know, just picking at their brains. And every single one of them says it's about the fastball location. It's not really how fast it is. It's just about the location. And he's doing an excellent job. There was multiple times, you know, tonight and 5 days ago where he'd just tie hitters up with a fastball. And I'm like, oof. Just because you know how quick that is, it's like, that's nasty. You don't just miss there on accident on the inside part of the plate.
Yeah, it's some of the stats that Joe Luckup was tweeting. I wish he would have done a little bit earlier so I had time to put them up on the screen. Come on, Joel. But no, I mean, some of the pitchers that Lodolo has been comparable to, you know, striking out, the list that he put where Lodolo had 30 strikeouts and one walk or less over like a three start period. There's like four pitchers that have done that like last 20 years, and they're all like elite starting pitchers. So just to be able to strike out this many batters and not be walking guys, like that's not normal.
It's crazy.
Like, that's not there. That's top of the line starters. And, you know, I mean, he's going to have some ups and downs, some growing pains here and there, but And I'm excited to see him finish the year.
6'6" tall lefty that throws sliders like that. That's rare. That's really rare. So that's pretty awesome. I don't know if they like. I think the easy thing you often see people do is because of his height and the left hand. They're like, well, you know, he's got a lot of Clayton Kershaw to it, which is obviously calmed down. I'm just happy that he's really, really good now. So if he ends up being Clayton Kershaw, hell yeah, sign me up. But, you know, let's just enjoy him being really good at the time being. So,
yeah, I see more Cliff Lee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's the one that always I see a lot of that.
Yeah. Maybe if he could be 4 inches taller and grow a mullet, and then we could be like, he's the next Randy Johnson.
Didn't Cliff Lee have like 7 pitches? Like way back, even way back then.
Larkin, I don't know if he compared him to Randy Johnson, but he said something today with Randy Johnson in the broadcast. I think he said something along the lines of reminds me of like trying to step in the box against Randy Johnson or something like that with the Dolos. So I was like, whoa, Larkin saying that, you know. So
yeah.
Breaking news.
He faced Randy Johnson, so I mean.
Yeah. I was at a game. That's what I'm saying. He said Johnson. It was frightening.
That's why I made that comment earlier, because that's what Larkin said, that he swung at a slider and then both feet were off the ground when he finished that swing because he thought it was going to hit him in the feet.
It's the only way you're going to get a walk from Lodolo is if you get hit by the first pitch he throws.
Yeah. Which, I mean, the first couple starts, you kind of like, you know, his first couple starts early in the year, you saw he had that St. Louis game. I think he hit a couple batters and stuff like that. And then, like, once he found his groove, yeah, it was a blast. So obviously, you know, at this point of the year, Nick, kind of pull, if you don't mind, pull up real quick, just discussing some of the rehab assignments. It looks like we can look at potentially having Hunter Green coming back pretty soon.
Yeah, who's that guy?
I think he pitches for the Reds. Looked really good. 15 strikeouts and 7 innings, only 2 walks in his rehab start. So,
why isn't he throwing in the big leagues right now?
stir. But yeah, no, Green's look great, and he's what's 9/17? Is that Saturday? Yeah, no, it's a Saturday. He's starting one of the games of the doubleheader. We'll have that graphic up a little bit. Then Graham Ashcraft made his first rehab start tonight. Struck out the side in the first inning, gave up some bloop hits, looked really, really good. The report was that he's planning on just a 1 rehab start, and he'll be back through 53 pitches tonight. So, I mean, you know, he should be able to. Not many starters right now are going more than like 3 or 4 innings anyway, so I don't, you know, think that part of it's a big deal. And then our good friend Connor Overton came back this week, probably going to be back in a relief role when he comes back. And then Daniel Duarte and Robert Duggar. I won't go into too much detail about those future star arms, but they have also started their rehab assignments. And if you're watching, you can see their statistics on the screen.
They should just like piggyback some of these guys, like Green and Ashcraft. Like, that's going to be much watch TV, right?
But yeah, I mean, I think tune in. I'm assuming they're going to go with the 6-man rotation. I'll just skip ahead and pull up what it looks like. Kind of their thing. Chase Anderson's obviously going to get booted, but they're starting Sessa on Sunday, and they don't have to. The way that some of the comments from Larkin, you know, makes me think that they want to keep giving Sessa a opportunity to start. So I wouldn't be shocked if there's 6-man starts, if there's, you know, Chase Anderson probably, whichever starter they think isn't going to go the deepest, he'll probably be ready to go in the 3rd or 4th inning and kind of be a bulk reliever starter type guy. But yeah, I think there'll probably be some piggyback and you know, maybe 7-man rotations and all kinds of weird stuff to end the year. But hey, at least there's some quality arms on there. That's, you know.
They're sprinkled in there.
I mean, Lodolo, Ashcraft, and Hunter Green, you might be getting them 3 out of 4 days coming up. So
I was really hoping like that Tuesday,
the rest of them,
that Lodolo will be pitching the Tuesday game, because the Wednesday game, we obviously have a show, so I wouldn't be able to go to that one, but I'll say about going to the Tuesday game against Boston. But, you know, can't have your cake and eat it. Thanks, Mike Minor. Been a lot of fun. Yeah. Let's get real quick into the rule changes. I know we talked a little bit with Tom earlier in the show, but kind of go through real quick, just kind of summarize. 15 seconds of bases are empty, 20 seconds pitch clock when runners are on base, only 1 timeout per plate appearance, And then the bigger bases, which we've talked about, and the shift restriction, where two infielders must be positioned on either side of second base when pitch is released, and all four infielders must have both feet within the infield when pitch is on the rubber. So, really, I know like this has kind of come out. There's been a lot of people have been against it. Joey was obviously on the Athletic this week and talked about how he loves it. I kind of like it. You know, I'm obviously all for quicker games, like I said earlier, especially with us doing some like really late Wednesday shows sometimes. Like that's going to be really helpful for us, obviously. But seeing the reduced time in minor league games, to kind of see that at the major league level, and like you kind of said earlier, Carlos, like bringing the athleticism back into major league baseball and things like that. Like I'm down for it. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, so do I. I think this is going to do nothing but, you know, make the game more entertaining, more fun. Like I don't think really anybody's really going to pay attention to the clock. Like most baseball fans, like true fans, really could care less about it. But it will be nice to be able to see, like, damn, it's game's over in 2 hours, 15 minutes. That's awesome. But everything else is just going to make, you know, going to make the Major League Baseball player a better player, going to force them to be a better player, all-around player. You're going to have to be able to do more than just hit offensively now. Like, I'll just use Jonathan India as an example. Like, he better start playing defense a little bit better. You know, you're not going to be able to hide him amongst the shifts. Yes, wherever. Like all these shifts, you're not going to be able to hide these guys.
Great point.
So it's going to be fun. I'm glad it's happening.
Seems like a good time to have 4,000 shortstops.
Yeah, right.
Carl knew it was coming.
Yeah. Here's my big question. This is a really dumb one because it's just, you know, how my brain works. How many back spasms do you think Hideo Nomo would have had if we had the pitch clock at 96?
I think it's when you start the motion, so I don't think that would actually.
Yeah, once you first, like, yeah. I was watching Clevenger tonight, and I'm like, ugh. Like, can it start when he starts rocking or whatever, starts twitching?
See, there might be some more exaggerated deliveries out of this. People,
yeah,
might, you know, to kind of slow the pace down a little bit.
Pitching out of the stretch will now be slower.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all for the pitch timer. When I went to 4 games in a week, when Dayton was up in the Cleveland area, you don't notice it. You won't notice it at all until it's like the seventh inning. And you're like, oh crap. Like it's the seventh inning and I've only been here 90 minutes. Like that's wild. And obviously Major League Baseball, it's not going to move that quick. For me, the pitch timer is not going to make me watch more or less Reds games, but I think probably it might make me watch more casual games. You know, there's a lot of times where I'll turn on a game and it's like the eighth inning and I kind of watch for a little bit and just be like, yeah, you know, and it's moving slow. I'm, you know, find something else to do or go to bed or whatever. I think it'll help with that. And it's also going to help not necessarily just all the time, but the dead time. I know like the diehard baseball fans, like that's stupid. Like that's why we love baseball. But I think just not having dead time, there being more action is going to really attract a lot of, you know, younger fans and going to have people more interested. And when it gets to the ninth inning, you'll have more fans in the stands than, you know, some of these other games when half the fans are already gone, especially in the cities where they're relying on trains to get out. If you ever go to a game in DC, like half the fans are gone in the seventh inning because the last train's gone in the seventh inning. So,
yeah, I went to the Rockies game this Sunday in Denver, and we showed up in the bottom of the first and we left like top of the eighth. Like, it was perfect. It's quick. It's nice. 2 hours. See you later. Had a great time at the ballpark.
Yeah. No more Hunter Strickland. 20-minute top of the eighth or ninth or whatever.
I got to show my buddies exactly where I gave up a home run there too. Pretty cool.
Did you get a photo next to it?
I was like, hey, you see that 375 sign right there? Yeah. Your old buddy gave a home run right over the top of that.
Was that your bit?
Yeah.
we got a good question on the shift. Really good question. Really like this question from Mr. Juan. which pitcher will be most impacted by the shift? And he suggested Graham Ashcraft. And I think you're probably spot on. He's the easy answer because he's the one that strikes out the fewest. So there's going to be more balls in play. So I would think it would impact him the most. Whereas there wasn't a whole lot of balls put in play on Lodolo. So I don't know if it's going to really impact him as much.
Yeah, I mean, that makes the most sense.
Same.
The guys that don't strike out a lot of people can put the ball in play. You're going to count on the defense a whole lot more. So there's only going to be two guys on each side now.
I don't hate Ciani.
Kirby hates Ciani. Here we go.
Oh, man, here we go. No, I don't hate Ciani. I really enjoy watching him play. He's a very fun player. I'm just not convinced he's a big league player at this point, at least a big league starter. I like him. He's a fun player, but
not everybody can be in the big leagues, guys.
Yeah, and also the bigger bases, I heard that it might help a little bit with stolen bases. I didn't really think like they're going to be bigger, so it's going to be a little bit closer. I wish they would ban replays on overslides.
Yeah, yeah.
That would,
please give me
that. How is that not addressed?
Like, that's the, like, if you can't see it live, they overslide, like, it didn't happen. Like, that's the dumbest thing. Waste 5 minutes on it. Like, no one enjoys watching a player get screwed for having their pinky barely go off the bag. Like, but yeah, and I think more shift predictions will come. I think this is just the first wave. I think eventually you'll see them have some sort of ban standing behind the bag, standing behind second base. But that's still going to be legal with the rules next year. You could still have your second baseman or your shortstop stick right behind second base, and you still could have those, you know, line drives right at the middle still be stopped, which is annoying, you know, to watch. Like, that's one of the things we want eliminated. That would be pretty tough to, like, implement right off the bat, but I could see that in a couple years being added to this. I think they've already started it in one of the leagues. They've already started working on some sort of, they have, like, a line where you can't stand before the pitches on either side of the bag.
I think the people who are against it are necessarily just people who don't like when things change in general. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. Billy Hamilton would love that the new bigger bases, says Jim. Well, Jim, you still can't steal first base even with bigger bags, so I'm not so sure about that.
He's still hanging around, isn't he?
Hey.
Yeah, Miami. He was playing, like, second base this year.
Yeah, hey, good for him, man. Hey, ride it out.
We have a resurgence.
Yeah. I mean, he's no Daniel Duarte getting called back up and getting hurt and missing a whole year on the MLB dime, but
he kind of fits in with the 2022 team. I don't know.
I kind of wondered when Seattle, like, did not elect to bring him up to the club and he elected free agency. I was like, could this maybe? And I was like, never mind. Then Chase Anderson showed up. I was like, they probably could have made it happen if they wanted to.
Chase Anderson.
I always forget that Billy Hamilton played in the playoffs the year he was with the Braves. Like, that happened.
Was he in the playoffs?
Did he get a ring?
He didn't get a ring. Hmm. Was he on the playoff roster, though? I know he was. It was like Brandon Phillips World Series with the Red Sox, where he was, like, in the organization, so he got a ring.
Pretty sure he was on the 2013 playoff roster.
He was. Yeah,
he was. I don't think he played.
Yeah.
Because they were down, like, 6 runs, like, right away, but...
Yeah, because I know a lot of people want to be
Billy Hamilton.
You're right. Let's get to our good friends at 538 and their playoff projections. How about we do that? Shall we? All right. So if you're looking, I know.
I tried. I don't know.
Dude, it's hard. It's There's nothing you can do. So in the American League, you can kind of see it's going to be really hard for Baltimore, as good of a season they've had, to catch up on 5 games. I know anything can happen with 20 games left.
They do have 6 games against the Blue Jays, so, I mean, like, their only hope is, like, to go 5-1.
Right, yeah, and that's highly unlikely against that team. I saw Vlad hit his 100th homer today, by the way. That's pretty cool. Good for him.
I don't like how they have those Brewers odds.
What do you mean?
Like, the Padres 74% to make it and the Brewers 39%?
Well, who plays the Reds and Pirates?
But the Padres have a tough schedule too.
And Josh Hader.
And it doesn't even matter who they're playing. Like, they could easily Man, if I was a bet man, I'd throw some money on the Brewers to make it. I wonder what that live.
Oh, I thought you. I thought you were going the other way. I thought you were. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I thought you were saying you were surprised that the Padres odds were so low. Not that you were,
no,
you're
so
surprised
high.
The Brewers are so low. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I mean the schedule, the September schedule.
Especially with Josh Hader.
Juan Soto turned into, I don't know, fucking, who's a less than average outfielder? Shit.
Oh, wow. I don't know. Old takes exposed. Go and get that clip ready to roll.
God almighty, so annoying.
I do agree with Jim. I'm also sick of seeing the Dodgers every year as well, but unfortunately.
I like it. I like seeing the Dodgers and the Yankees in the playoffs because I like to see them, you know, big crowds and all the hate because all the rest of the baseball world unites against them. Like, that's cool, and see it taken down because I don't just want to see Tampa Bay and Toronto and Milwaukee and I want to see the big names in it.
Like Seattle.
I'm
San Diego.
I want to see all these other ones. I want to see
Philadelphia.
It's kind of interesting that the big selling point of adding playoff teams, which I overall think is probably a fine thing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny that this year there's going to be less close races down the stretch than there would have been. Because if there was only two wild cards getting in, you'd have Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Toronto all fighting for one spot. And same thing in the wild card. You'd have the Phillies, Padres, and Brewers all fighting for that one spot. So it kind of actually this year has kind of backfired a little bit and is going to create less September drama. But, I mean, that's, you know, a year-to-year thing. You know, maybe next year you'll have, you know, 10 teams all.
Throw the Reds in the mix.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like that in the divisions too. Like if you look at like the Guardians right now, obviously they're on a big stretch, but like how close they are with the White Sox at four games kind of makes it really enticing as well. So I'm saying this one because now that my wife's family's up there, Nick's up there, and Nick's wife is a big Guardians fan. That's my team the rest of the year. That's what I'm hoping to see make a run. So
They're looking good. I mean, they got a 4-game lead. They got a big game tomorrow against the White Sox. They have a 1-game makeup game where they could either go 5 up or White Sox get it back to 3. They get up to 5 with like 19 to play.
Yeah. Is it in Cleveland?
Yeah, it's in Cleveland. Yeah, we shouldn't have a meeting.
So that's your American League team. Do you have a National League team, Tim?
Because you're my friend, I'll pull for the Padres.
Nice.
Yeah, because I love you.
I don't really like any of the National League teams, to be honest.
I mean, I did kind of say earlier in the year, I was really loving watching the Mets play. But then it was like, it's still New York. So I kind of took a step back. Sorry, John Tancredi. I know you were awesome to have on the show and you're my good friend, but.
Those are super high win totals, too.
Yeah, like, they are.
The Padres are at 78 already with like, 20 games to play. And the Reds were in that spot last year and finished with 83 total, you know, so those are super. I mean, it's just such
a lot of bad teams to beat up.
Yeah, there is. There's a ridiculous amount of bad teams. So.
Of all the bad teams, too, do we think Baltimore will be a good team? Like what they've done has been pretty awesome.
I mean, they're 74-67.
Yeah, man.
Five out of the third wild card spot. Like. That's tough.
They got Trey Mancini.
Yeah, because everybody said, Trey Mancini, about,
I'm sorry, but
we all thought about, oh, if you're 500, you're going to be in the race. Well, you got to be more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's definitely year to year. But like, this is, I think this is good for baseball. I think this has been awesome. So yeah, I dig it. Go Guardians.
Take the shift away. Bring back the hot baseball.
Yeah. I'm with that too. There's the pitching matchups coming up for the 4-game set. First in St. Louis, you got Chase Anderson and Miles Michaelis, Justin Dunn, Jack Flaherty, Hunter Green coming back Saturday against Dakota Hudson, and Luis Sessa against new ace Jordan Montgomery. He's been ridiculous since he went to St. Louis. It's not fair. Then next week, you got the two Boston games where we'll see old friend Tommy Pham come back and get his tribute video showing him slapping Jock Peterson in the outfield while also throwing people out at second base. Can't wait for it. And then you got a couple.
Is he going to get booed?
I don't think he will. I really don't.
Well, I'm sure there'll be more Red Sox fans there than Red.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know. Do Red Sox fans like him?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything. So
let's start a GoFundMe so I can get a flight to go up there just to boo.
You'll probably, man, I don't know. With Boston, though, they'll probably have pretty nice crowds those 2 days. Those will probably be the two highest attended games the rest of the year.
I'm going to ask the Riverfront to sponsor me on that because they do a good job fundraising.
But they don't go to games.
But they're going to fundraise it for me.
I don't know. I feel like that might go against the principle.
I'll talk to them.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
The dilemma. Yeah. To boo Pham or not to boo Pham?
We'll do a Twitter poll next week on the Late Night Reds account. If you are attending the game, so Jules, or if you're not attending the game, so not Jules, will you be booing Tommy Pham? So, yeah, I think it'll be fun.
Yes.
Social experiment. Let's do it. All right.
From San Antonio.
So the remaining schedule the rest of the year here up on this map. So like I said, we talked about the games coming up. Then you got three more with the Pirates and six more with the Cubs and the year after that, which is absolutely hilarious how that worked out. But yeah, we're crawling towards the end. I know this wasn't the season anyone wanted to have by any means, but you know what? I've still had a lot of fun being on here with you guys every week.
Green Ashcraft and Lodolo. They're going to be pitching.
Dude, Tyler Stevenson was incredible this year. Like, we've had some fun things to look at.
But he won't be catching this year.
No.
But no, those guys will be back. We got some excitement here to the end.
Joey Votto might still be doing broadcasts, hopefully.
I feel like he's on every other night. I don't know. Is he? Yeah. Does he have a bio on Valley Sports Ohio?
He needs to clean that up. All that neck hair, little, nasty.
Little chin action, yeah.
He got a polo, so I think he's part of the team. So yeah.
I'm looking for his bio. Like, it's like, Bally, you got to get it up at this point.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's been fun. All right, well, I think, did I miss anything? Are we good? Did we get it all?
We nailed everything? It.
Awesome. Nailed. Well, perfect. Well, before we do get out of here, as always, got to do some housekeeping. First off, once again, if you are watching this on YouTube and you are not subscribed, just take 2 seconds. Go up there, click that like and subscribe button. You're in the chat with us every week, so why wouldn't you do it now? And also, if you want to get those alerts, even though you know we're on every night, but sometimes we do special episodes, we'll give you the alerts so you can kind of keep up with that as well. Please, whatever your podcast app of choice is, please make sure you go and give us a nice solid 5-star review so we can beat the algorithm that is nearly impossible to beat for smaller podcasts. That goes a long way. And then, of course, if you want to support the team, me, Nick, Carlos, and you want to show some love to us in your homeland, please go to latenightreds.merchmake.com, grab some t-shirts. The beautiful hat Carlos is wearing, I'm currently in the process of working and getting up on the website if you want to grab one as well. So we are in negotiations for that. So
Late night retweet.
Yeah, buddy. So also, we are also all brought to you, as always, by our good friends at BetOnline. Please go to their BetOnline, use the code BELIEVE50 for your 50% welcome bonus, and hopefully the Bengals can beat a backup quarterback this weekend. For Nick, for Carlos, I'm Tim Daniel. Thank you guys for hanging out with us this week. Thanks for hanging out with our guest, Tom Nichols, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.